Houston.
This is 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. It's 6 o'clock and time for Open Journal. Open Journal is your weekly magazine of what's happening in Houston. Join us this hour for conversations, community news, and local music with your hosts, Dwayne Bradley and Stephanie Coleman. And now, from our Lovett Boulevard studio in the heart of Montrose, the Journal is open.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Welcome aboard. You are tuned into the Open Journal. It is Monday, no fooling, April 1st, 2019. Welcome aboard. Thanks for supporting Independent Radio and KPFT Pacifica. And thanks for supporting the Open Journal. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. It is wonderful to be here at the beginning of this month, as this year is slowly moving ahead of us in spite of our best efforts to slow it down. As Dwayne says, we're glad to have you with us. On the first half of the show, we have Mr. Nick Guyton and Mary Manning, who will be talking about the Tejascot Soul Project. And in the second half, we'll be joined by Peter Brin and Jimmy Pryor from the Citizens Climate Lobby. As always, this is community radio, a place for you to have your voice. So we welcome your opinions about tonight's shows, past shows, or suggestions for upcoming shows and guests. Feel free to share your thoughts with us on Twitter with the hashtag KPFTOJ, or you can find us on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. Open Journal at kpft.org, and we have the A Wonderful Advancement in Technology, and our podcast is also available for hearing shows that you might not have caught.
Yeah.
So you can follow
up. We've got
up
the
on
KPFTOJ
that.
Podcast at all the hot podcast sites.
So that's right.
Avail yourself of that opportunity. Every edition of Open Journal is sliced and diced in a beautiful way by our own onboard sushi chef, Susan. And then we create a separate program for each guest segment. We edit out the ranting that I'd usually do, and the song of the day for copyright purposes, we can't throw that in there. But we do try to leave you with a thought to carry you through the week. And something I've been thinking about to lead off the program today, and it's on kind of a sad note, is dear friend Dr. George Ryder, longtime host of the Thresholds program on KPFT, former chair of the Pacifica National Board, board member, local station board member, all around good guy, certified genius. I saw the documentation, and professor of physics at the University of Houston for many, many years, died Saturday afternoon. Mm. I believe. So our condolences to Deb Shafto, his lovely wife, who also was a long-suffering member of the KPFT Board of Directors. and we send our thoughts and prayers to the Ryder family, to the Shaftos. And we'll keep you apprised of developments in terms of a memorial service. I know that he is being cremated, and I'm led to believe there will be some services at the University of Houston in the near future. He was a longtime professor there, but more than that, he was a dear friend. He was a very kind-hearted man. He was very principled, very ethical. He was a practitioner of reconciliation. Mm. He was a proponent of nonviolent communication, and it was an honor to know him and work with him over the years, and to consider him a friend. He was also, just as a little side note, he was the only, in my memory, the only programmer from KPFT's entire program staff back in the '90s who actually walked out from the station and got out on the sidewalks with us when we in the HCPR movement, who had been suing Pacifica to get our station back in the hands of the community, which at that point had been marginalized greatly in some activities in the removal of all of the indigenous programming in 1996 that was exacerbated over the years, culminating in a lawsuit in 1999, which, you know, went on for several years. And then in December of 2001, of course, was the decision that brought about this whole bylaws revolution, this member-driven organizational structure, and all of the lovely, swampy mess
yes,
that is
that
the politics of people-powered radio. We just did half of the seats on the 24 member board of directors last week, and I wish them all well. They have a lot of work to do, but we miss George Ryder, send our love to Deb. I wanted to visit just for a second about the president,
yes,
whose name I don't like to say because it just builds his brand. So I will just say the president.
Fair enough.
You know who it is.
Guess where from.
But just by not saying the name, I'm not building brand equity, and that's really what he's in it for.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not about serving the country, as far as I can tell. It's about building up the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody who I don't think has much of any kind of a Texas connection whatsoever, in any positive way, he's doing what I think is an interesting Texas two-step. TransCanada and mm-hmm. the whole Keystone XL pipeline, mm-hmm. you know, had been stopped again by a judge in Montana, and so our good friend in Washington decided that rather than deal with the court case, which is taking too long and time is money when we want to devastate the arboreal forest in Canada and bring it down in sludge form to the Texas coast and send it off to other parts of the world as gas products. So he goes ahead and issues a brand new permit, claiming he has executive privilege to do this, and thereby circumvents the entire legal process and essentially gives TransCanada the green light to just go ahead and you know, full speed ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting when we look at this. I was talking to someone earlier. The myth and the math is when we have politicians who say they'll do something and the process is cumbersome and they can't. And then you have a person in office who somehow seems to will the fact of all things wrong without committee or process. It becomes a little perplexing to mm-hmm. see how this works. But I would expect we have capacity to organize as citizens.
One of the things that really bothers me, and there's a bag full, and we're not going to have time to dig in too deeply into that bag, is just the sheer number of executive pronouncements, as mm-hmm. if there was not other branches of government mm-hmm. involved, as if there were, dare I say, dictatorial powers at play.
Yeah.
And his abiding love, it seems, for strong men, emphasis on men, and strong men, from Duterte to Putin to any other larger-than-life semi-bad guy around the planet that gets, you know, ultimate authority. If yeah. Genghis Khan were still around, I think that would be a role model.
But who he is and who we allow him to be is something that I think as citizens of this great country, we need to really take our role in enabling or supporting by not doing... We're not doing enough. We have to really take our role in this very serious mm-hmm. because no one can run a nation without having any conversation from the individuals that are voters and invested in its well-being. And if we allow it, then so we have allowed it to be right. And I would hope not just at the election, but on a day-to-day basis, we get up and behave as citizens. So listeners, that is what we hope you get from our conversations here and on all the other shows, that it is a part of you.
A citizens-based participatory democratic republic, it has the necessity of citizen participation.
That's right. You can't just tune that in when you want.
Yeah. Okay, so there is another topic that we want to touch on briefly here. It's 10 past the hour. You're tuned to the Mighty 90 KPFT. This is the Open Journal program. We can't go without mentioning the ongoing saga and the Ship Channel with ITC and the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and what they're doing and more what they're not doing. Mm-hmm. The cleanup continues. One of the things I noticed the other day as I was looking into this is, you know, we mentioned last week its proximity to the battleship Texas, the San Jacinto Monument, and all that out on the east side. And so all of the San Jacinto Day activities that were scheduled for the next couple weeks here around Texas Independence and all that, they're canceled because of the fact that, well, you can't really get there right now because these roads are still locked down. There's cleanup crews going around with giant squeegees and such.
Oh, you forget about the...
And then I missed Beto at TSU the other night. Were you there with
Well, interesting enough, we weren't there, but as we were making the corner, we saw Beto driving off in his van. We were like, what is he doing driving himself? But it was really wonderful to see citizen engagement.
You should have followed him. He probably was going out for a beer.
I thought about it. Yeah. Then I saw his security behind us, and I thought, they might think I'm off. But it was brilliant to see. It was a incredibly diverse group. They were young. They were mobilized. It was different ages, different nationalities. People came to do. I'm a personal fan of Beto, but whoever runs a good race, I think it's great. But it was nice to see him. It was a lot of people there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of calendar items we'd like to share with you before we get into our conversation about the hot Tejas Got Soul project.
That's right.
And we got some special guests we're going to be visiting with momentarily. But first of all, we've got a couple of other
awesome
cool things we want to make sure that they're at least shot across your bow, and what you do with them is up to you, because we could spend the rest of the hour telling you cool things to do in Houston, because this is...
The coolest place ever. Well, what we like to do is to keep it within budget, so we'll start first with this free event at Harry Shepherd's.
I specialize Shepherd's. In the free things.
That's right. Yeah. His 91st birthday party, Brasil Cafe, 2604 Dunleavy, tonight from 7 to 10 p.m. For more information, go to BRASIL CafeHouston.com.
You know, Harry is a living legend, and playing the vibes. He used to play evenings over at the Dharma Cafe on Houston Avenue with David Craig on a world of different flute instruments, and then Harry would play his things. And he is just the best. And 91 years old, he has played with all the legends. I mean, he's from New York City. He was a session man back in the 50s. And he has worked with, you name it, he's worked with these people. So if you're out and about this evening, Brasil Cafe, it's free, and I actually looked into it. Happy hour all night, not just till 7.
Right, it gets even
better. This is 7 till 10 p.m., and it'll go longer because Harry just likes to party.
I mean, at 91, what do you have to do in the morning? You might as well go for it.
So I also wanted to tip you guys off to a documentary film screening this Friday evening down at the Dominican Sisters Spirituality Center at 6501 Almeida, right there just north of Holcomb. It's called Undeterred, and it is about immigration. It's free, though donations are always welcome. You can get more information about it. Again, it's Friday night. It's at 8 o'clock down at the Dominican Sisters place, HPJC, which is short for the Houston Peace and Justice Center, hpjc.org for more info.
And to have a conversation and interesting ear of students and writers who are doing a lot in Houston, you can't miss Writers in the Schools Space City Grand Slam, which will be at Match, which is located at 3400 Main Street, Sunday, April 7th at 3 p.m. It is free, but tickets are required. So go to matchhouston.org for more information and to get your tickets.
Okay. And this one's a little tricky. You familiar with something called Pizanka?
I am not.
I'm not either, but there's a Pizanka HTX workshop happening at Avant Garden, which is like I could throw a rock and hit it from here. It's at 411 Westheimer, right around the corner.
Awesome.
Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. this Sunday. It's free, but you got to register by dropping Mariana an email and or calling over to the Avant Garden. It is this workshop where you're going to basically use this ancient Ukrainian art form to make these custom Easter eggs. and you'll be trained in this by this amazing cat named Nestor Topchi, who happens to be married to Mariana, who is a fantastic woman and the mayor of Montrose. So this is in conjunction with the Texas Folk Arts Commission. Limited capacity, so they need to know how many eggs, I guess, and how many people to make space for. So you need to RSVP to Mariana, and it's just Mariana at avantgardenhouston.com. And, you know, or just look them up and figure it out, because we trust you.
You're just smart. When you thought you've done it
all. Right. Quarter past the hour, we're moving on. Time just it goes that way. So welcome aboard. Thanks for being with us. This is the Open Journal on KPFT. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. Music scholar Isaac Rodriguez says the late 50s, 60s, and 70s were a great time in Houston for Chicano music. Bands of that era playing R&B and soul music were unknowingly planting the seeds of La Onda Chicano, the Chicano wave, the genesis for the sound that we know today as Tejano music. Tejas Got Soul was formed to fill the generation gap and shine the spotlight on the artist, sound, and era considered to be the golden era of Chicano music here in Houston. On Saturday, Texas Got Soul will pay tribute to the pioneering musicians from Houston's East End. Also on hand will be representatives of the Houston Metropolitan Research Center's Memory Lab, who will be archiving memorabilia from that era. With us this evening to tell us about the special event are musicians Nick Guyton and UH librarian Mary Manning. Good evening and welcome to Open Journal.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, hey. Glad to have you
Hi.
Both.
Oh.
So, hey, Mr. Nick Guyton, so you have jet lag?
No.
No? Not yet? You just got in.
Well, you know, my schedule's so weird. My sleep schedule is some spotty thing, so jet lag has to catch up to me. I think the Jets get Nick lag.
So what's your take on this Tejas Got Soul project, and you know, how would you describe it, and what's your role in it?
Oh man, well, with an amazing team, we put together this event that's happening this Saturday down between Canal and Navigation in Houston's Second Ward, which so many of our roots are in. And the partner of mine, Isaac Rodriguez, and I, it all started with a Valentine's dance where we wanted to spend some Chicano soul, and he has an amazing record collection, and he's just has this wealth of knowledge on the subject, on this music, and we circle into Houston because we're so proud, some proud Houstonians, you know, and we're both from, you know, north side and southeast and roots in the East End, and Isaac lives in the East End now, and you know, we've been just doing this thing, and we wanted to celebrate the music that came from our city that sometimes is not always on the map when it comes to Chicano soul or Tejano music, or you know, just sometimes music in general. You know, Houston has a rich history in all the genres and areas, and we're celebrating Morales Radio Hall, which was the first bilingual station in the city.
KLVL, back
KLVL.
In the day.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And a lot of these bands and these singers that we are celebrating, they got a lot of love there, and it starts here in Houston. So that's one part of it. I mean, we have some of these singers, Jesse Casas and Manuel Mendiola, who are going to come sing, and we're going to pay tribute to Oscar Villanueva, who recently left us, and he was on the schedule to be here, but unfortunately, you know, he's not with us anymore. But he's still with us, and we're going to celebrate his music.
Yeah,
and that's what's happening. That's awesome. We're going to be archiving pictures, record, I mean, anything that somebody has from back in the day, the Pan America Ballroom, from their days hanging out just anywhere in Houston where this music and the onda was happening. We're celebrating all of that, and we're collecting all of this stuff. We've been doing interviews with different people in the music community and the community in general to archive these things and stories. And we're going to achieve all of that day as well, because we'll be having a digitization booth and a storytelling station for people to share their memories. And this is going to bridge a lot of gaps,
mm-hmm.
generational and otherwise.
So what's the time specs on this, so people can plan their evening and day?
Sure. You're looking at 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday. And we're going to be there at 111 North Ennis, between Navigation and Canal, at the Morales Radio Hall, which was the home of the station there. And it's right next door to Morales Funeral Home.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody...
And it's catty-cornered to a place I was at recently called Moon Tower. Yep.
That's right. It sure
and
is.
Kind of behind the original Ninfas and El Tiempo. And
that's it.
I mean, it's right in the heart of a lot of stuff.
Oh, it's in the heart of Second Ward through and through, and it's right pretty near the Esplanade, too. So it's a stone's throw. With that arm you got, if you can hit the avant-garde from here, yeah. Like you just said, man.
You really do some damage. That's great. So Houston has a wonderful history of Tejano music.
We do.
But Texas is a competitive place. Mm-hmm. So how do you think it compares to San Antonio? In general, do you see a relationship or a distinct sound or a distinct experience?
You know, something this beautiful is to me something that is beyond competition. I mean, mm-hmm. we leave that to the mainstream radio stations to compete for things like that. But when we know our roots, you know, we know where it comes from, and it's not just one place, because we are a region
yeah.
ourselves here in Texas.
Yeah.
So to say, you know, it's here's the deal. Isaac and I, where it all started was, we kind of was thinking, well, Houston sometimes, you know, we have our rich history. You know, we had Duke Peacock Records,
mm-hmm.
Gold Star Studios that became Sugar Hill. And all of this stuff connects there. This is another piece of the big
yeah.
puzzle that we are here
yeah.
in Houston, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just one another thing that makes us so proud. So to say, I mean, we when we play our records, Texas Got Soul spins everything.
Yeah.
All around Texas, from Corpus to San Anto to Victoria to everywhere in between. I mean, it's all out there. So it's beyond competition.
That's wonderful.
Is the best way to put it.
So, you know, Houston, it has sort of historically struggled with both its physical mm-hmm. buildings as well as its history and legacy
right.
to preserve those things, to elevate them to the level they should. What do you think the challenge is with that, and what do you hope to sort of accomplish from gathering this experience?
Well, you can tear down an old building mm-hmm. and break some hearts
mm-hmm.
and because it's cheaper for somebody to come redevelop something and say, well, we'll just talk about this as history. Well, you can't get rid of music.
Mm.
And as you collect this sort of this data, these memories, this memorabilia, these stories that are coming from the people that were there, you can't destroy that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't wipe out that history. You might be able to tear down, you know, a brick and mortar. You're going to upset some people, but we're here to preserve more than that. So even if some of these people and places aren't physically here, we're recording things and taking this down to where we can pass it on. And that's a big part of this is why with UH Libraries, mm-hmm. we are going to be archiving our interviews, and we're going to be collecting all of this material that we're getting.
Well, that means a lot. I think as human beings, there's something to have your story archived, your moment in time and your
yes,
experience
yes.
Saved.
And Houston Public Library is providing a big part of that with the technology to record these,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. to record all of this,
yeah.
mm-hmm. document this.
Mr. Nick Gaitan visiting with us here on The Open Journal. You're tuned to Pacifica Radio. We're about, a good ways into the program here today, but we still have a lot to talk about. And one of our other guests, along with Nick Gaetan is Miss Mary Manning, who's here. She is Librarian of the Year.
That was way back in 2016.
That never goes away, Mary.
It does not.
She works at the University of Houston Special Collections and is part of the coordination along with the Houston Public Library and the Houston Metropolitan Resource Center, the archive branch of the Houston Public Library Group, behind this whole memory project. Tell us some more about that.
I will tell you a little bit more about that, bouncing off what y'all have said.
Yeah.
There are going to be some community documentation activities during the event inside the Morales Hall. One of the events is actually, we haven't talked about yet, is, well, we mentioned it a little bit, the storytelling booth. But that's going to be led by Dr. Jesus Jesse Esparza from Texas Southern University. Mm-hmm. He's leading a team of oral historians and students to collect the stories of people who grew up with Chicano music, be it La Onda or Chicano soul or early Tejano or later Tejano or just the stuff that they grew up listening to in their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, we're opening up a little bit wider. We're hoping to get some things particularly related to the Tejascot soul stuff, but we want to know what music people were listening to. So mm-hmm. we're collecting their stories. And we also, the Houston Public Library, Houston Memory, they're doing a project called Memory Lab. They're doing a Memory Lab pop-up. And during the pop-up, you can come and tell your stories. If you don't have a story ready to tell, they'll ask you some questions about the music you grew up with and that type of thing. It's, you know, so come and talk to us. Come and share your stories with us. There'll be a sign-up. You'll get about 15 minutes to tell your story. There'll mm-hmm. also be a sign up for the pop-up, and you'll be able to bring in about 5 or 6 things. You got about 20 minutes to digitize those materials.
That's wonderful.
So they're going to, like, scan some old flyers or posters or ticket stubs or record sleeves, things like that?
Photographs.
All that.
Yeah, we won't have the capabilities on site to do AV, mm-hmm. But this project that HPL is doing called the Memory Lab will be at Houston Public Library, and they'll be able to get stuff like cassettes and videos for the family and that you'll be able to take home. But at this event, too, we also want to say that you're going to be able to take this stuff home.
Yep.
So we're going to get your stories, hopefully. And so come and talk to us and come and bring some flyers, some photographs. You'll take home a copy of your story or a copy of your scans,
that's wonderful.
Too.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And the stories... And the scans will become part of the Tejascot Soul Project Archives, which, being an archivist, I have to talk a little bit about archives, of course.
Indeed.
Those will be coming over to U of H Special Collections, U of H Library Special Collections, where they'll be preserved and will they be made available to the public. Anyone in the public can go there when we're open mm-hmm. and come and see any of our collections. We love to share what we have, but the Tejascot Soul Project Archives will be one of our collections. And we will share that with community and preserve it.
So for a younger generation, we have a sort of a range from those who know about a Dewey Decimal System and those who use Wikipedia. So how do people sort of navigate archives? Like, what is that process like for people who are not necessarily frequenters to the library?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we have a site. Just Google UH Special Collections, and you'll come to our site, and it'll tell you about all of the collections we have. We have a lot of different collections, a hip-hop collection, Hispanic collections, music collections. We also have rare books and that type of thing. But once you get on that page at U of H Special Collections, you can learn more about what we have, what hours we're open, and we want everyone to come in and see what we have. We have a lot of students and a lot of faculty who use our collections, a lot of researchers, people who make documentary movies, people like Ken Burns love to use archives, a lot of documentary filmmakers use our collections, but anybody can come. All you have to have is some sort of ID.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. We'll be coming to check out the Tejas Got
Soul.
I'd
love to give you a tour.
I'm so proud.
You should be. That's a wonderful, you know, sort of a wonderful legacy to bridge the gap between what could have been forgotten and leaving something for another generation to explore. It's really
impressive.
I'll tell
you what, I'm hoping some people show up and bring in some of the old KPFT recordings they put on their cassette tapes from back in the day, because I remember listening 30-plus years ago to Monday, Tuesday nights on KPFT. There was Gordy the Boogeyman Rodriguez. There was Jumpin' Jesse Salazar. There was Noche de los Chicanos. There was La Onda Musica Chicana. There was a lot of really great stuff that came right out of this room and that one right there behind us.
We need that stuff for the archives.
So, yeah, y'all listening, KPFT folk, bring it on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
That's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be so much fun, and there's going to be a lot going on.
This is wonderful. So could you kind of give us the dates and times and information again
Absolutely.
So people can know more?
So that'll be this Saturday, April 6th, from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at 111 North Ennis, and that is in Houston's beautiful Second Ward, and that is between Canal and Navigation. So if you are from the area, think about the Morales Funeral Home and Radio Hall area. It's near Ninfas and El Tiempo. It's near the Esplanade. It's a stone's throw from
the Moon Tower.
Moon Tower, too. Yeah. So, yeah. And I don't want to be near Dwayne and a stone. No, but it's going to be that's going to be happening out there. And, you know, people bringing their memories. We're going to have a good time. Music. DJs spinning vinyl, lots to talk about, a discussion panel.
Oh,
things getting digitized.
Yes,
you know,
in the discussion panel.
The car club.
And Veteranos Car Club is going to be representing, pulling up some rides.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What an eclectic Sweet. Experience. Sweet. Yeah.
We'll oh, yeah. It's a full-on thing.
All right.
DJ Simmer Down.
Rodriguez, partner, Isaac Rodriguez, our community scholar and partner in the Tejas Got Soul production team, is going to be spinning with his awesome collection, his fearless collection of Chicano soul and Tejano music.
Fantastic.
That's a bad man.
So bring your dancing shoes.
So I've seen the Facebook page, Tejas Got Soul. Where else can people dig up more details if they need them?
We're looking, for the most part, if you're a Facebooker, then you go to Tejas Got Soul, Early Chicano Sounds of Houston, and we have an event page that you can link up to there, as well as the page for the event in general, where you can send questions and things like that and just collect information. We also have an Instagram account that is Tejas Got Soul, just the same. And, you can also find me on Facebook, Nick Gaitan, and if you need any information, you can reach me. But that's about the main...
Yeah.
If you hit the event page, you should get everything you need there.
There's
all there is to it is going to be on there. And then links and different bio information on the artists that we're featuring and honoring. Our recording artists, Manuel Mendiola, Jesse Casas, and we're playing tribute to Oscar Villanueva. And I have an amazing band behind. We have an amazing band behind these guys, and it's going to be fire.
All right.
Also, if you want to know a little bit more about the scanning and the storytelling, there's some posts up on the page, too. And there's a place where you can sign up. But you can just come and sign up at the event.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Mary Manning, Nick Gaitan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, man.
And we're looking forward to Tejas Got Soul.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
All right. Hey, we're going to be visiting with Peter Brin and Jimmy Pryor from the Citizens Climate Lobby in just a moment. But first, it's time for the Open Journal Song of the Week. And I've tapped my buddy, Mr. Nick Gaitan, to bring the tune this week. And it had to fit all the rules for Song of the Week, which means this is a spot-on piece of Tejas Got Soul for you. Nick, tell us about it real quick.
This is a track by Jesse and the Crystals, the band that was led by Mr. Jesse Casas, one of our featured singers this weekend. And this is a song called Tell Me, which is a really, in the Chicano soul genre, and for all the record collectors and everybody out there, this here's a gem. So we hope you dig it, and this will be one of the songs that we're featuring this weekend.
All right.
It's hot.
Maverick, Let It Rip.
told me you were mine. You told me that you cared. You said that it was love from the start. But I know I made you cry when I cheated and I lied. Please love me once again, and we'll never.
Man, a little slice of
Tejas
soul.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, that was Jesse and the Crystals and the Chicano soul hit, Tell Me, Open Journal Song of the Week. If you've got a tune you'd like us to consider for artist or song of the week, just email it, oldschool@kpft.org. You tuned to the Mighty 90 Pacifica Radio, listener sponsored and commercial free, 90.1 FM, 100,000 broadcast stereophonic watts of freedom. It is Monday, the 1st of April. No fooling. Welcome aboard. I'm Duane Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. We're glad to be with our second guest, Peter Brin, who is Texas State Coordinator for Citizens Climate Lobby, a volunteer since 2013 when he founded CCL's first Houston chapter. He has a degree in transportation from MIT and is a technical solutions manager for ABB Marine Imports, designing pure electrical and hybrid diesel electric systems for marine use. He has spent his career in the energy industry. In addition, we have Jimmy Pryor, who joined CCL in 1996.
2016, actually.
2016, that darn internet. And has an MBA from UT Austin. He is a member of Live Oak Friends Meeting and founded Sunbody's Hats, where he's bringing palm leaf hats from Guatemala to the marketplace. Welcome, Peter and Jimmy, to Open Journal.
Well, thank you. Thank Very you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining
you.
Us.
For those who don't know, we'll start with the basics. What exactly is the Citizens Climate Lobby?
Well, Citizens Climate Lobby was started in 2007 and by a gentleman named
Marshall Saunders.
Marshall Saunders, that's right. And he was very concerned about climate change. And so he decided to use a model that he had used previously combating world hunger in an organization called Results. Citizens Climate Lobby is a volunteer organization, and we focus on passing legislation that will combat climate change. And so we have chapters, over 500 chapters around the world, most of those in the United States. And the chapters, generally speaking, focus on their particular congressional district, their member of Congress, and lobby Congress to pass legislation to put a fee on carbon. So we're basically about building the political will in a very methodical way to get some action on climate.
So as a volunteer organization, how did you both get involved with the organization? What sparked your interest and how did you hear about the organization?
Speaking for myself, I was focused on climate change for a long time, and I was seeking what to do about it. I think a lot of folks hear a lot about it and they're aware of the issue, and usually the answer is, well, go home and change your light bulbs and, you know, drive less. And so for me, I was looking for something. I said, that's great. Everybody's got to take their own actions. That's important. But how do we do something more systemically? And when I found Citizens Climate Lobby, it was very appealing to me. I was working in the oil and gas industry. I was at ExxonMobil for 8 years. And While I was there was when I founded the first Houston chapter. And to me, it was appealing because it was an organization that's built on relationships. It's built on engaging folks, sort of not demonizing anybody. We're not really a protest organization. We like to say we're an organization for things, not against them. And so specifically, we're for a piece of legislation that we believe is the best first step to begin solving climate change. In a systemic way, in a society-wide way, and that is up to the scale of the problem.
So the legislative changes. Oh, sorry, in addition, what actually brought you to...
Well, Jimmy Pryor, what's your entry story?
You know, I heard a podcast that was talking about Citizens Climate Lobby, and it was the thoughtful, respectful approach in dealing with everybody, especially members of Congress. So having an approach that looks for the best, it's not naive, but and actually has a concrete proposal and goes in and has rational discussions based upon the facts and does work to build relationships with members of Congress and with our fellow citizens as well. So it was that approach that was very attractive to me.
So for those who get their politics on TV, is there like hope for conversation? Do you see positive trends in terms of conversation and legislative change? Is it something that all parties seem to be open-minded about? Are there other complexities in this process that need to be addressed or could use more attention in order to move these issues forward?
Well, it could always use more attention. That's for
that's
sure.
Right.
But yes, we do see hope and that there is interest on both sides of the aisle in addressing climate change. On the conservative side, it's more muted, but we have seen change just in the last few months, and I think that some of that was sparked by the IPCC report last fall saying we needed to make big changes in the next 12 years. And also by a U.S. government report highlighting how much it could cost the U.S. if we don't act. So we've seen Republicans that formerly did not, either were, skeptical mm-hmm. or deniers, saying, no, this really is a problem. We need to look at this. So it's hard, but I think there's hope.
Well, what have you seen as some of the sort of trigger points? Like, what are some of the we're dealing with a fire sort of close and local? There at times seem to be so many factors that are accelerating climate change and really putting a lot of pressure on our environment. What are some of the major ones that you think we should address for citizens who are looking to do more as a first priority?
There's probably a lot of ways to answer that question in terms of priorities. I guess since we're speaking, about in our organization, we're pretty narrowly focused, as I mentioned, on our carbon pricing piece of legislation. And I should point out that, as I mentioned before, we're an organization that says we're for things, not against them. And mm-hmm. so we recognize there are a lot of priorities out there, and there's a lot of organizations doing a lot of really good work on so many issues that are out there. And you highlight a lot of them on the station. In our particular case, we believe that the most effective way to move forward is to stay pretty laser focused, and so we sort of deliberately try not to jump into other issues, really to try to build consensus around this one. And as an example of that, Jimmy mentioned some movement we're starting to see more on the Republican side. I identify as a fiscal conservative myself. I do a lot of outreach with Republican groups in town, and I'm a member of some of them. And I've seen even locally that there's been some movement there. And I've presented to the Republican Liberty Caucus a few weeks ago, and it was a really good discussion. I think when you approach, as you mentioned, when you get away from the cable news and you get away from some of the just the partisanship, and you really just sit down and have conversations with people and speak to their values and understand what is it that is preventing you from maybe coming to the table on this? What are your concerns? Bringing another IPCC report or science report will be impactful with some folks, but it won't be impactful with everybody. So you have to understand sort of your audience, understand who you're speaking to, and what are their concerns that will push them, move them on this issue.
So we're visiting here with folks from the Citizens Climate Lobby. You're tuned to the Open Journal on Pacifica Radio. Peter Brin and Jimmy Pryor are here visiting with us. Peter, you said you had worked for 8 years for ExxonMobil, so you're steeped, I would guess, in that particular aspect of what brings you to this advocacy position. Maybe you could help explain, without getting too bogged down in all the details that may lose some of us, this Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, which is really kind of the main driver, as I've seen it, behind what Citizens Climate Lobby is most interested in doing. And we've heard a lot of talk over the years about a carbon tax or carbon trade-offs, or you could buy, like, when you fly, you can pay somebody to plant a tree to make up for the fact that you're ripping through the air or whatever. So maybe you can boil some of this down for the layman in most of us.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Try to make it as simple and straightforward as possible. So basically what it does is it applies a fee to carbon emissions. It makes them more expensive. And if you are a consumer, you know that when you go to the store and you try to buy something, typically you look for a good deal. You know, you're going to value different things, quality and different aspects of the goods that you buy. But generally speaking, price is going to be a big driving factor. And so if we put a signal into the marketplace that emissions are no longer free, you know, I can't just toss my trash out onto the street, right? I'm not allowed to do that, and I shouldn't be allowed to do that. And I think you'll find people across the political spectrum agree with that. So if we collectively decide that, hey, there's a cost to putting CO2 into the atmosphere, it's right now it's not reflected when I go to the gas pump, but people are paying it in their health care, they're paying it after floods and after Harvey and things like that. So we want to internalize that cost. So as the price goes up on carbon emission or carbon emitting activities, it sends a signal to the market that, hey, we got to do less of that. We have to find different ways to still meet the quality of life that we all want, but do it in a different way. And then the other key, really key part of it is taking all the money that's collected from that carbon fee and sending it back to households. And we advocate doing it in the form of basically a monthly dividend check. So all that money that's raised goes back to households on a monthly check. And what that does, and it's not means tested, everybody gets the same check. What that does is it really helps to offset the impact on low and middle income households who get hit the most by any kind of new fees. Mm-hmm. So it has a whole bunch of benefits just by doing it that way.
So how do you derive that number? I get bogged down thinking in terms of putting a price on carbon.
Mm. Yeah. Administratively, that's a great question. This comes up a lot, and we engage folks in the industry about this. So administratively, by far the simplest way to do it is, you know, in every MMBTU of gas, so basically in every quantity of natural gas, in every barrel of oil, and every ton of coal, you pretty much know exactly how much carbon's in there. So you know when it's combusted how much CO2 is going to go out. Mm. So what we do is we just say, just apply it as far upstream as possible. There are already mechanisms in place for measuring gas, coal, and oil as it's being developed. And so we utilize those mechanisms, add the fee there, and that's basically how it's administered. And we find that by far that's the easiest way to do it. And most organizations we work with and talk to about it seem to agree.
Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons that we have motivated to bring y'all in today is that there's actually climate advocacy training process, and that there's actually a gathering coming up in Galveston for folks who might want to get a bit of in-depth advocacy training. Could you tell us more about that, Jimmy?
Sure, absolutely. Marie Miglin, who heads up one of our chapters, is going to be conducting this training. It's going to be held at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Galveston on Sunday, April 7th, from 12 to 2:30. It's free. Lunch will be provided as well. And what participants will do is they will learn a little bit about the basics of climate change, how carbon impacts, causes a rise in temperature, though not very much on that since many people are already familiar with it. And then become familiar with Citizens Climate Lobby and our vision and ways of working, in particular the bill that is now before the House of Representatives and how it would work, placing a fee on carbon and rebating it to households, and then also how to interact with members of Congress. So we have developed a methodology, a process of meeting with members of Congress and building a relationship, and good ways to do that. So they'll be learning about that and then also practicing it, having some mock meetings with your member of Congress to see how that's done.
So how to engage in the proper form.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I also, Peter, I wanted to ask you, if you would, to expand on some of the activities that you're involved in. I read that you were part of leading Texas as well as Southern Energy Freedom Tours. What's an Energy Freedom Tour?
We did two. There are a few years in the past now. As the Texas state coordinator, I sort of help our chapters across the state, looking around the state. We have 36 congressional districts. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we looked and we said, you know, I had resigned from Exxon and I had some time off, so I was able to do this. And we said, you know, between our sort of 4 big cities in Texas, we had about 2/3 of the congressional districts covered in some sense. We had chapters, we had active liaisons working with those offices, we had relationships there. There was about 1/3 of the state, about 12 congressional districts, where we really did not have much of a presence. And so we just strung together a road trip, and we spent about 4 weeks on the road. We visited about 22 cities and over the course of a month and did presentations. We met with local chambers of commerce, local mayors, city council folks, and et cetera, faith leaders and others, trying to build support. But really the key thing was trying to grow chapters, because once you create a chapter, that's a sustaining, you know, group in that area, because otherwise it's just a flyby. We come in, give a presentation, we leave. But if we can really create something that begins to live and breathe, like, you know, a chapter. And so we had some success on the Texas tour. We did another one a year later in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, and we got about 11 chapters started that time. Wow. So that was fantastic. And so that was great. I haven't done one in a while, though.
Well, how many citizens are actively engaged in this movement currently?
The Citizens Climate Lobby, there's different ways to measure that. I think we have, there's over 100,000 who are sort of signed up with Citizens Climate Lobby.
Yeah.
My rough estimate is probably 10% of those are really active at any given time.
Sure.
Yeah.
We do have a number of chapters in the Houston area. And if you're interested, you can go to citizensclimatelobby.org and find your local chapter or sign up.
Mm-hmm. So do you guys have anything on the horizon in addition to the event that's coming up on April 7th? Are there other ways that people can really join? Do you need more and more volunteers? Are there special topics that you want to have additional participation?
There are always activities. This particular month is an interesting one. We are following KPFT as an Okra Charity Saloon contender. So for those of you familiar with Okra Charity Saloon downtown, the charity bar downtown, they feature 4 charities each month, and we were lucky enough to be selected this month as one of them. So we're going to be there having several events this month. You can go to bit.ly/CCLOkra to learn more about that. And lots of stuff always going on, though.
Well, we wish the Citizens Climate Lobby, I think, better luck than KPFT had as, well, that, as one of the four nonprofits last month.
Well, that's why we're stacking the deck. We're gonna have three social events this month, and if you go to that bit.ly/CCLOKRA, you can sign up and join us at one of the events, have a few drinks, meet some folks, and hopefully vote for us. So
that's wonderful.
All right.
We just hope we're not up against a dog charity, because if there's anything with puppies, we're gonna lose.
Or babies. I know from experience. Thank you, Peter Brin and Jimmy Pryor from Citizens Climate Lobby.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, it's time to wrap up the Open Journal for this week. I'm Stephanie Coleman. We invite you to stop by kpft.org for more of this evening's program, the archive of which will appear in the In On Demand tab at kpft.org. And you can listen, download, or podcast this show for the next 60 days. Please let us know how you feel about what we've heard and shared with you today and offer any suggestions and ideas. We'd like to thank our all-volunteer production staff, including engineer Ramblin' Rick Campbell, producer Susan Phillips, and social media support from Maverick. Open Journal theme music provided by Kevin McLeod. Be here with us on Open Journal next Monday, April 8th at 6 p.m., when we will be joined by Robin Riegler of Writers in the Schools, and even more.
Maybe even Andrew Dansby.
Oh, the mythical man.
Okay, yeah. Hey, Andrew. All right, but for now, we leave you with a thought to carry you through the week. And on this April Fool's Day, it comes to us from Mark Twain, who said, April 1st, this is the day upon which we are reminded of what we are on the other 364. Take care of each other.
If you decided to donate your birthday to KPFT this year, thank you. If your special day hasn't yet arrived, consider donating your birthday to KPFT. Here's how it works. Facebook sends you a prompt before your birthday asking if you'd like to donate your birthday to a nonprofit. Select KPFT as your organization of choice. Then add a personalized message so that your friends know how much KPFT means to you. On your birthday, they'll receive a Facebook notification asking them to make a donation in your honor to KPFT. Thanks again for supporting 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Pacifica Radio for Peace.
In association with Young Audiences Houston and Kerr High School, KPFT presents the KPFT Art Gallery, featuring a wide array of photography and mixed media. KPFT's new art gallery is located in the station's front lobby. All art is available for purchase, with the proceeds benefiting both KPFT and college tuition funding. Contact partner at kpft.org. or visit the membership office during business hours for more information. So come check it out sometime. This is KPFT Houston. Shaky Graves and Dr. Dog will be co-headlining a show at White Oak Music Hall on Friday, August 23rd. Shaky Graves will be performing songs from his latest album, Can't Wake Up, with Dr. Dog performing from their album, Critical Equation. The performance will also feature Caroline Rose and is open for all ages. Tickets and more information available at whiteoakmusichall.com. To learn more about community partners and events happening around Houston, visit kpft.org or email partner@kpft.org. This is KPFT